Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. As always, appreciate you being here. We are joined today by the one and only Justice Mosqueda. You can find him on social media at JUMOSQ. You can find him on acmepackingcompany.com, which is soon going to be filled with all the training camp updates you could possibly want in the world. Justice, we are so freaking close. How are you doing, my friend?
Yeah, man. I'm excited to get real football news pretty soon and have Pats come on for the first time and get real info. We're done. We're out of the conditioning phase. Thank God. Well, almost, right? I mean, They still have to do the acclimation period, which is fine. We'll see if Anthony Belton shows up. I know that's something that's been bubbling up now. If you guys didn't follow, Trey Harris, second round pick for the Los Angeles Chargers. He's a wide receiver. He was picked one pick behind Anthony Belton. Hasn't signed with this team like Anthony Belton and 30 of the 32 second round picks in this draft class. He participated in minicamp. He did offseason OTAs. The Chargers started training camp earlier this year, a week early before everyone else, because they're participating in the Hall of Fame game. Trey Harris isn't practicing, officially a holdout. And, you know, rookie contract players, because they're not under contract, don't get fined in the same way that like veterans do, right? Like if Elgton Jenkins holds out, I think it's something close to like $50,000. It's either $50,000 or $100,000 a day. I can't remember.
It's expensive.
It's a big number. It's a bigger number than I would pay to not show up for one day of work. But the rookies aren't getting hit. If you're wondering why, you know, second round picks haven't signed yet, it all comes down to Jaden Higgins, the second pick in the second round for the Houston Texans, signing a fully guaranteed contract that guaranteed him north of $11 million on his rookie deal. For perspective, Javon Bullard last year, the Packers' second round pick, got something in the ballpark of like three. So pretty big gulf between three and 11. That's why everyone's kind of waiting this out. Certainly didn't help that. So the way that the draft went, right, it was Schlesinger, the first pick of the second round for the Cleveland Browns. The Browns gave him a fully guaranteed contract because if Higgins was going to get it, one pick behind him, Schlesinger is going to get it, right? The next domino is Nicky Manwari, the safety out of South Carolina, who signed with or it got drafted by the Seattle Seahawks. And then after that, Quinshon Judkins, who just got arrested for domestic violence by Cleveland, a team that already was willing to give the first pick a fully guaranteed contract, but they were already hesitant on giving the fourth pick that, and now he's got a legal matter. So Eman Worry is now kind of on this island, and there's not going to be anything settled behind him, you would think, anytime soon. So at some point, the Seahawks are either going to feel that heat and want to get him on the field, and Eman Worry's going to have to make the decision on whether he's going to hold out for camp or not. the other player to keep an eye on is Tyler Shuck. Usually quarterbacks push markets forward, especially in like rookie contracts. I don't know if people are that aware of that, but that is something that like really does happen. Tyler Shuck, I think, was like the eighth pick in the second round. So a lot of teams are looking at Eman Worry and are hoping, you know, they get a decision done, or Tyler Shuck, and hoping that they get a decision done with New Orleans Saints. But the Saints and Seahawks are holding out, hoping that players behind them sign, and they sign for a whole lot less money. So it's a waiting game between everyone in the second round right now. And we're going to have to see how, you know, all these players deal with that situation. There was an interesting report from On3 today that said Shamar Stewart is actually back working out with Texas A&M, and he thinks that there's a legal way where he can go back and play college football this season. And he thinks that that's part of his leverage with the Cincinnati Bengals. So we'll see if it gets that far with some of these second-round picks. I don't think it will. The Bengals are a very unique situation. That Key Higgins deal that he just signed, I think that's the next Trey Hendrickson contract for them, where they're just going to have to continue to revisit every single year because he's going to look at the market and be like, I signed for so much less than my value. Congratulations on doing that, Bengals. I got my signing bonus. Now we're renegotiating this every single year. This is one reason why I said, like, a couple episodes ago, like, people have this, like, Madden brain where they're like, you know, extract value, extract value, extract value. In real life, it doesn't work like that because holdouts are a thing, right? And hold-ins are a thing where you can just show up, not practice, not get fined. So I think you're going to see some of that from these veterans pretty soon.
And it could affect Green Bay and the offensive line in a major way from both of those sides of things, because you have Jenkins, who is a potential hold-in candidate with the contract that he's hoping to sort of figure out. And then you have Anthony Belton as a potential, I guess, holdout. It's not really holdout since he's not under contract, but he's not there because he's not under contract yet, at least theoretically. So that you could have two of your top seven theoretically along your offensive line that could potentially not be there to start camp, including Elgton Jenkins, who would like getting in that rhythm with Jordan Love to start getting the cadence, the snap, everything just kind of together on the same page.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't want to say his name again, but Pretty Ricky dropped the news that Trey Smith is about to get a record-breaking deal for the guard market. So I cannot imagine that will help Elgton Jenkins' case. Yeah, because basically the situation with Trey Smith is there's a deadline on when you can give a multi-year extension for players under the franchise tag, and that deadline is coming up, right? So if he wants to play on anything beyond the franchise tag, he's going to have to ink a deal pretty quick with the Kansas City Chiefs. So, all things that are happening in the NFL. It's been a very interesting time. We haven't even talked about the NFLPA and all the collusion stuff over guaranteed money and how that impacts the second-round picks. It's been a busy time for general managers in a time where this is usually your only time off and you can go to the beach or go to the lake, whichever one you prefer, and hang out with your family for like a month. These guys have definitely had to do more work than they're used to at this time.
Do you think there's anything, I mean, the Jenkins thing's probably a little bit different for Goody, but to the extent of, you know, with Belton right now, I almost feel like he probably could put the out of office on until a few of the other second round picks around him sign. Mm-hmm. They probably can't do anything up until then. I would be pretty stunned if all of a sudden, like, the next second round contract was Belton's, like, just out of nowhere, like somebody in the middle of the second round got done. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. So I almost think like he probably can't, because like we've talked about, the rest of the contract's done, right? Like the length of the contract, the amount of the contract, everything else is settled by this point pretty easily. It's just guarantees, maybe some offset stuff, but for the most part, that stuff's probably done. You just have to figure out the guarantee. So until all the ones that kind of get done around Belton, or at least one of the other, either before or after, he's probably in a spot where it's like, all right, well, we'll touch base once we can touch base. And in the meantime, it's kind of much ado about nothing. It's not nothing because you want him there, but I don't know if either the agent or the GM can do anything in that situation.
Yeah, and I mean, we dealt with it with the Love situation, right? Where everyone involved was kind of like, yeah, dude, it's in his best interest to not practice until he signs this contract, right? Yeah. So I don't think that there would be any crazy animosity. Like, every GM is dealing with this around the league right now, right? Like, 30 of 32 second round picks have not signed. Like, this is not a uniquely Packers thing. So on the Belton front, I don't think that there would be any animosity or anything like that. He's not really been working with the ones too much, right? Like, if we're talking about guys off the bench getting work, like, it's been Monk and it's been Jordan Morgan first and foremost. So, you know, it would take a couple things for these practices to substantially matter for Anthony Belton. you definitely probably don't want to, you know, have him in. Like, he signs the day before week one of the preseason, right? You don't probably don't want to throw him in at that point. You still want the acclimation period and stuff like that. But beyond that, I mean, unless you're looking at the sanctity of preseason games, I cannot imagine that it would be a massive, massive thing. It's just a situation that's happening around the league right now. It just kind of is what it is. The Houston Texans just kind of – and they signed it so quick. I mean, they signed – it was like the week after the draft. I want you guys to remember. So that happened probably early May. I wrote about this more than 3 weeks ago. And there has been 0.0 movement on the second round market. Like, everyone is just waiting out Eman Wari and Shuck. And until the Saints and Seahawks have, you know, that pressure point really leaned into, and they feel like they have to make a decision on those, I just don't know how many people are going to hold out. So that's the reality right now.
Couple questions. You mentioned Eman Wari as kind of the next one up, yeah, and then it could potentially cascade from there. As far as I'm aware, I believe the first pick of the third round is signed in Darius, yeah, Alexander. I could be wrong on that, but is there any opportunity for it to come back from the other way and the Eagles work out something with Andrew Mukuba as the last pick in the second round, kind of basing it off of, you know, kind of the third round pick and what's happened in years past, and it start kind of cascading the other way?
Yeah, I mean, if a late second round pick gets a fully guaranteed contract,
well, then, right? Then it's over, something, right? Then
something close to that. Yeah, I mean, movement can happen from either end. I think it gets really complicated at the top right now because Eman Wari's kind of on the island. The Judkins legal situation does not help his case at all, right? Like, the reason that the Bengals are fighting with Shamar Stewart is over this default language. Right, where like if he gets in legal trouble or anything like that, his contract voids basically in perpetuity instead of just that single season. And I think some of that is based off of the Jermaine Burton stuff that they had to deal with last year, which, buddy, if you talk to anyone in college scouting and anyone at the college level, like, Jermaine Burton's stuff was not an unknown. There's a reason why the Green Bay Packers brought him in on a pre-draft visit, right? The Packers, yeah, usually bring in, unless they're looking at the top of the market first-round picks, right? Guys that they would really like to target either via trade-up or in their spot. A lot of the guys that they bring in have either, like, injury questions or character questions or some sort of off-field questions. Like, even Edgerrin Cooper, like, he had the ATV accident with his girlfriend, where his girlfriend ended up passing away and stuff like that. Like, they just wanted clarity on that situation, things like that. They usually target those guys for visits because they want questions answered in person, right? Burton being a knucklehead, to put it modestly, was not a secret. So, you know, a lot of people are looking at that, you know, the Bengals wise, and it's like, well, why are you taking these guys? You're messing up contracts for the entire first round pick market out of nowhere. Like, they didn't do this with their last first round pick. The tackle out of Georgia. So
my understanding of it, and I could be a little bit wrong, but what I've kind of read on it is that this would not be the first or like the only first round pick to sign that terminology in this draft. So it's not like other players haven't signed this same thing, but the Bengals have not asked their first round picks to sign it in the past. Yes. So the Bengals
and Shamar Stewart was drafted ahead of the slot where Mims was drafted last year. Right. And the Bengals are just in contract issues in perpetuity with their players. So agents are getting in early and are like, no, lay down the law. Like, if you give up, like, you're going to be dealing with this shit for, sorry, pardon my French, you're going to be dealing with this for 10 years. While you're under contract with this team, right? Part of it too is, my understanding is Katie Blackburn, who is, I believe, the daughter of Brown, so the owner, owner slash GM, by the way. They have like a 3-man scouting department, in like front office, not just scouting, like full blown front office. Katie Blackburn is now the person who is doing contracts for the Cincinnati Bengals. So it's very important from a PR perspective that the probably next owner of the Cincinnati Bengals gets a PR win. All politics are local. Like, you got to remember, every NFL franchise is their own business, right? Like, these things aren't boilerplate across the board. So, yeah, it's a very interesting situation.
Their first round pick, because he went back to college and just didn't want to play there. Speaking of PR losses, like, that, it doesn't get much worse than that, than losing. Correct me if I'm wrong, the Bengals don't get any compensation, comp pick, anything for losing it. It's just gone. So, like, you would end up in this really weird situation where, you know, you would wonder if some team just says, we'll give you a second, and they almost, or like even like a third, they'd have to take it because they're at risk of losing everything. They would get nothing if he's able to go back to college. It would be a really, really interesting dynamic if he actually ended up finding an avenue where he could go back and play.
Yeah, and just proving the viability of this stuff would, because I don't know what their legal case is, but like, it used to be you sign an agent, you're no longer an amateur, it's over, right? Guys are signing agents for NIL deals at the college level now. So I don't know how that stuff has changed. I haven't talked to enough people about this. On3 reported this stuff today, that like Shamar Stewart's in College Station working out with the team, all that stuff. I don't know how much that would change the NFL draft, but like, for perspective, like, Quinn Ewers had an $8 million offer to transfer in college football. And he just signed a contract with the Miami Dolphins.
That
gives him like but it's like $100,000 in guarantees. And his average salary is $1.1 million.
Yep.
So that is 1/8 per year that he could have received by transferring somewhere. And it's not guaranteed. Like, he's QB3 in Miami right now. Right. So I do wonder. And this is way further down the line, because again, like, Stewart hasn't even proved that this is viable yet, right? This is all theory at this point, which, to be fair, like, I don't know if you guys have been following the courts and college football recently. They've been getting their asses dragged for the last 20 years. They lose every single time that they go to court. So, you know, I understand the optimism there, but I do wonder if there's like, because this happens in baseball all the time, if I understand this correctly.
Correct. Yep. You get drafted and then you go back.
Right. Guys get drafted out of high school. They don't like the situation that they're in. They just end up going to play college and then they re-enter the draft later, right? Like, maybe that is a thing that's possible and becomes another situation that you have to manage, you know, for these scouting departments and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it would certainly change a lot. Again, do not envy general managers right now. This is supposed to be their off time, only off time during the year. I know, you know, we could say they're getting all this money, all this stuff. Like, at the end of, like, they still got families, though. And that's really what I feel bad for, because I'm sure they're paying attention to all these situations league-wide, and they're just like, things are changing, man. Things are changing.
Very much so. I mean, well, even from like a college football standpoint, it's why Halfley decided to be, I mean, it's part of it. Like, Halfley's decided, like, I need to go to the NFL because like college is now 365. There's no break. It's constant. Mm-hmm. And it's not even coaching anymore. There's so much else that went into it. And now, like, for some of these GMs and NFL guys too, it's becoming even more and more taxing, where the time off that they get is not even there anymore. So yeah, it's a dream gig for some, but there's a lot that goes into it. And you don't get a lot of family time when it comes to that stuff.
Mind you, sometimes people are like, GMs are just like grinding film 24/7, right? I mean, there's 250 something draft picks every year. You got to watch at least, three games to get a feel for that guy. That's probably 3 hours per draft pick. So you're doing, I don't know. And this is assuming you're getting the right eyes on those right players, right? Identifying them year long. You're putting in minimum 3 hours every weekday, year round, to get information on those guys. And that's why you lean on college scouts. That's why we have college scouts.
if you spent 3 hours on the top 400 candidates, 400 draft prospects, right? 3 hours on each of them. You're basically at, you know, over 3 hours per day, because you have 400, you know, prospects, you're at 365 days a year. You're at about, you know, 3.5 hours or just a little bit under that, but you know, 3 hours, 15 minutes every single day. That's for 365 days a year. That's not Monday through Friday. That's 3 hours a day, 365 days a year, just to get the top 400 prospects. If you're spending an hour on, you know, or like 3 hours, whatever, it's a lot of time.
Mind you, you're managing the waiver wire cutdowns. You're trying to make stuff happen with your own roster. All the free agency is a thing that happens and certainly cuts away. Yeah, like this is why you have a full-blown scouting department. And then, you know, to your point, you know, the 400 kids, right? What happens when you have a wide receiver from Houston who transfers to Texas and then he starts breaking out in –
yep,
the playoffs and late November, and you're like, oh wait, that guy might be a first round pick. That pushes another guy down the board, right? So just getting your eyes on the right things is such a big deal, and one of the big reasons why college scouts still have jobs and area scouts are still really valuable. And that's not including any of the personality stuff that you're having to deal with, right? Like the, you know, figuring out what type of kid this is. You're just trying to identify an athlete within those hours. Yeah, it's a tough gig. It's a lot of hours at minimum. I mean, it might not be tough. I've definitely worked tougher jobs than that. I've worked manual labor before. I definitely sweat more doing that than watching film, but a lot of hours, long hours. And they really love this break between mini camp and training camp. And
I do too. Like we obviously it's a different beast altogether, but you know, trying to put out content during the entirety of the year and things like that. It's that one little between mini camp and training camp where there's a little bit of a break. It's why you see so many, you know, NFL personalities are taking vacations. I was just in Spain. I'm going to go on another little mini trip this week. So
lists. You got to choose one. Choose your path, Western man. Vacation or lists.
And or both. And or for me, I just do a bunch of episodes in advance, some of them lists, and then, you know, take the vacation while those are already good to go. But yeah, it's a crazy, crazy calendar in the NFL. They do a great job of keeping it relevant all throughout the year. And yeah, and we do, of course, now at this time of year, get to listicle season. So I just want to like kind of like we did last year, there's some new ones out there. So I want to get your thoughts on this. Let's start with the quarterback list from ESPN, which again is execs, coaches, scouts, allegedly. I don't have any reason not to believe it, but they're top 10, Mahomes, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Jaden Daniels, Matthew Stafford, Justin Herbert, Jared Goff, Jalen Hurts, and Baker Mayfield. Their honorable mentions, only two, CJ Stroud and Jordan Love. So they're basically saying Jordan Love, top 12 quarterback, but he does not make the top 10 in this list. Umbrage, no umbrage, feels right, feels wrong. How are we feeling about that top 10 list for ESPN in regards to Jordan Love? We'll be right back. Hey friends, it's officially the All-Star break, which means it's time to get ready for an epic second half of the baseball season on Prize Picks. And as always, Prize Picks is going all out just like they do during football season and have the best promos, prizes, and selections. And there's never been a better time to get in on all the action and to start winning real money. Now, right now, you can sign up on Prize Picks and get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It is absolutely guaranteed. So if you think Milwaukee's going to stay hot after the All-Star break, if you think Andrew Vaughn's going to continue to impress, then it's time to cook up your hot takes with your friends and win real money this baseball season when you and your crew run your game on Prize Picks. Now, I know I'm going to come out firing in the second half with some big-time selections on Shohei Ohtani, Jazz Chisholm, Christian Yelich, and All-Star snub Christopher Sanchez. The best part is that you can download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly on your first $5 lineup. So what are you waiting for? Prize Picks. Run your game.
In regards to Jordan Love, I thought the analysis was fair. Like even like the quotes that were brought in from those guys. Yep. And I believe it was Jeremy Fowler who wrote this up. He's like the number two behind Schefter for ESPN right now, as far as like the news breaking type of guy. The analysis was basically like, yeah, he was banged up to start the year. It took him a while to kind of like figure out how to deal with injuries and stuff like that, which is fair. I mean, he had what, three different injuries last season, I think. So
that we know of.
I think that's fair. And yeah, exactly. And then, you know, they left room for optimism for him to grow, which, yeah, I'm cool with that. They also mentioned, you know, toward the end of 2023, he was looking really good. Like, that's, if you ask me what my evaluation of Love was, I mean, that would pretty much be it. Like, would I take Baker Mayfield over Love right now? No. Do I think the Jaden Daniels stuff is just like completely broke, contained? And why are we ranking him as a, he was fifth on the list, right?
Correct.
That seems nuts to me. But as far as the actual like analysis on the Love stuff, like, yeah, pretty spot on. I mean, he should be in the conversation around those guys like, you know, Stafford, Herbert. Like, yeah, he hasn't had this all pro season, but he's definitely, you know, a quarterback that, like, if he hit the market, he could probably get fully guaranteed money if he actually hit true free agency, right?
For sure.
The Packers are lucky to have.
This was the quote: Love appeared ready for top 10 status by the end of 2023. He was effing outstanding, an NFL personnel evaluator said about the stretch. Play action on time, big arm confidence that shifted slightly in 2024 due in part to a week one knee injury that cost him two games. It looked like it took him time to work through managing that injury. The personnel evaluator said another full offseason with Matt LaFleur, more receiving options, and he'll be fine. So it like you said, I think everything's perfect. What'd you say?
No, I just laughed. I was like, yeah, I mean, that's,
yep,
that's literally like almost word for word would be what, how I would have evaluated Love. Again, the Mayfield stuff, that's too rich for my blood. Same thing with the Jaden Daniels type. But outside of that, the actual evaluation of Love, like, yeah, that's, it is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's totally fair. Others receiving votes that came in behind Stroud and Love as honorable mentions included Kyler Murray, Brock Purdy, Dak Prescott, Aaron Rodgers, Tua Tagovailoa, and Bo Nix. I want to know who is still voting for Aaron Rodgers in the top 10. That seems rather aggressive, but what do I know? All right, the one that
I'm surprised Purdy was honorable mention, and like
he was others receiving vote. Or do you think he should have been honorable?
If you flipped him with Baker, I think it makes more sense.
Okay,
right. That's just me personally. I mean,
I got a good look at
Brock Purdy wars happening on social media pretty much 24/7. If you want to get involved in that, but
nope. I did get a good look at Purdy, though, from watching every snap of Aaron Banks. Just inherently, you're going to get a good feel for Brock Purdy. And I was impressed. I thought he looked good. I thought he was able to make every throw, mobile, agile. You know, a couple throws I'm sure he'd like to have back here and there. But no, I thought overall, I came away more impressed than I was kind of expecting, to be honest.
Yeah. He's all right. He's cromulent. He's fine. Yeah,
fair enough. All right, the one that I did take a little bit more umbrage in, this is a player that I've been speaking out of both ends of my mouth recently, which I'm apt to do from time to time. I did overrated, underrated, and I ranked Zach Tom as slightly overrated because my argument was I think he's awesome. He's an unbelievable player. I think the Packers are lucky to have him. The versatility is amazing. But I'm like, a lot of people talk about him in like that all pro conversation or like a top five tackle. And I'm like, I can't get there. I think he's really freaking good. And there's very few people I'd rather have over him, but I can't quite get to like top five, top six. I also put him as recently when I did my rankings of the Green Bay Packers, I put him number two on my list of Green Bay Packers again, which just goes to show you how much I ultimately think of him as a player. I think he's at minimum in the top five players on the team. And again, I put him as high as number two. But where I think this whole conversation gets a little bit crazy is, again, ESPN put out their top 10 offensive tackles, and their top 10 are Wirfs, Penei Sewell, Lane Johnson, Trent Williams, Jordan Mailata, Rashawn Slater, Laremy Tunsil, Deion Dawkins, Christian Darrisaw, and Andrew Thomas. I think he should be in the top 10, but I can understand that's a really good list of offensive tackles. Maybe I won't get super upset about that. Then they have honorable mentions: Jake Matthews, Joe Alt, Ronnie Stanley, Colton Miller, Taylor Decker, and Bernard Raymond. So now we have six more. So we're at 16 offensive tackles. Still no mention of Zach Tom. Then they have others receiving votes. Now, to be clear, I don't know if these are in any specific order. They're not in alphabetical order in any way by either first or last name. So if it is, in fact, that these are in order of votes received, in front of Zach Tom, you have Brian O'Neill, Charles Cross, Orlando Brown Jr., Spencer Brown, Paris Johnson Jr., Luke Getke, Garrett Bowles. So you have 23 players that would be ahead of him. At worst, you've got, or at best, I guess, you've got 16 for sure ahead, and then him mixed with a group of 8 offensive tackles in a others receiving votes category. That, to me, seems way too low for Zach Tom.
For sure. I think in the context of all pro, especially if we're looking at this as left and right tackle, I think it's going to be tough for him to make all pro anytime soon.
Agreed.
Because you listed, what, two of the top, I think two of the top three that you listed are right tackles, and then there's no other right tackle on that top 10 list. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just going to be tough with those two guys up there. Historically, Tom has been an elite pass blocking right tackle, had a little bit of a down year last year. You can watch like the Lions game and stuff like that. I do think Arrow is moving up for him as a run blocker. He should 100% be in the honorable mention category at minimum, not the others receiving votes category or being absent off of that. I will say, like, there are going to be some people who just remember him as that skinny, small fourth round pick who they evaluated as a center, and that's just going to
skew them. Yep.
That's just, I mean, it's just going to color their worldview. Right. That's just how they see football. Like, if there's guys who their ideal tackle, they're looking at guys and they want someone who's 6'6", 330, you're never going to convince them like Zach Tom is that guy. Yeah, right. So I do think that's some of it. Like, if you're a size queen, right, there's always going to be something to pick at with Zach Tom. But I think he's a very good football player. I'm hoping that he can find that consistency again as a pass protector, because I thought last year was a little bit of a down year in that aspect, but he has gotten better as a run blocker for sure. He's a more well-rounded player, sort of in the same way that we kind of talked about like Rashawn Gary, right? Where it's like, yeah, his pass rush production went down, but he's definitely a better, well-rounded player last season. And that's why Gary earned the Pro Bowl vote, right?
Some would say Zach Tom's worst years as an offensive tackle or most offensive tackles' best years in the NFL. No, I'm just kidding. Like, he was to the old Aaron Rodgers.
I mean, true.
Yeah, probably
true. Especially at right tackle, right? Like,
yes.
Again, like, you can look at some of this stuff from like a, even just like from, and I know it's like iffy with the PFF stuff for offensive linemen, all those things, but like, you could look at like the splits between left tackle and right tackle. Like, teams are still, for the most part, at all levels of football, putting their best offensive linemen at left tackle. When Zach Tom does the things that he does, especially from a pass protection standpoint, it does really stand out at right tackle. When you're like, he would be a top 10 pass protecting left tackle. At right tackle, that's top 3, right? It just sucks that, you know, you're getting probably 2 Hall of Famers in Lane Johnson and Penei Sewell playing at the same time. So you're not kind of receiving the same type of accolades. Plus, you're getting dinged for the size stuff that is just like, I don't think he's going to grow 3 inches anytime soon. So I don't think that's going to change.
The other thing here is this could make for a very interesting contract negotiation, because if you're Zach Tom, you're pointing to, because I remember I was listening to the Athletic Football Show, you know, maybe this was probably months ago at this point. They were talking about contracts and they were, something with Zach Tom, it was like, you know, just a little bit over 20 million. I'm like, he's going to get way more than that. I'm like, what are we doing here? And I forget, like, there was a group of players that they were putting him in that category with. And I'm like, no, Zach Tom is way better than that. But
yeah, Dan Moore got 20.
Yes, exactly.
So, Dan Moore is the, you know, we talked about the nuke with Jaden Higgins and how
he's the nuke at
the Texans just kind of threw the bomb on the entire market. Like, Dan Moore is the bomb in the offensive tackle market. And it's probably why the Packers have not only hit tackle once, but twice in the last 2 years with high draft picks. And I'm like, I don't know.
Rasheed Walker. Dan Moore after that Steelers game and give him a big hug and just be like, thank you so much. You've done so much for all of us. But yeah, no, I'm intrigued because again, if you're Zach Tom and his agent, you're being like, it's like the fifth best tackle in football. Like we want to be paid as such. If you're the Packers. You're going to point to some of this stuff and be like, we kind of view him as more of like the 20th or 22nd or whatever. Like there could definitely be a little bit of a gap there, which is going to be interesting.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Like accolades do matter a lot. Cause you're in different markets, I guess is the way to put it. I think ultimately everyone kind of at least gets in the ballpark of what they should get paid unless the market is rising, right? If the market is rising, it's just people bidding for each other. But I do think like the Packers negotiation strategy is probably looking at non-Pro Bowl, non-All-Pro tackles who signed extensions and presenting that, which isn't totally fair because again Tom is probably right on the cusp of some of this stuff, so I assume he's gonna be pushing forward. The Dan Moore stuff is gonna help. We'll see what happens with the Trey Smith stuff because again that's a non left tackle that is signing, right, which is semi-relevant to his market, so we'll see what that number ends up being. I think they're gonna get something done with Tom. I don't think that they're prepared to move on from both tackles at this point. And they seem way more likely to move on from Rasheed the way that they've kind of rotated Jordan Morgan in that left tackle and stuff like that and talked them up at that position and just kind of let Zach Tom be the steady Eddie out there at right tackle. I mean, we had the stuff. Well, it was Demoski reported last year that the team thought Zach Tom could have been like an all-pro caliber center. Right? Yep. And center vacancy happened, and it was Elton Jenkins who moved inside. It wasn't Zach Tom, right? So worth thinking about. I think they're going to get it done. I'm not too worried about the Tom contract.
Yeah, I think they'll get it done as well. I'm not concerned about it. Just could make for some interesting contract negotiations for sure. The other one that I wanted to bring up really quick was Rashawn Gary, number 80 on NFL Network's top 100 players or NFL's top 100 players of, I guess, is it 2025 or did they count it for 2024? I don't even care. He's number 80 on the list. Of course, this is a much discussed player in Packers Nation. You have to take into consideration the high draft pick. You have to take into consideration the contract that he signed. But there's a lot of stuff out there, as some of the statistics are showing this week. One actually on NFL.com, when they're listing it, said, quote, Rashawn Gary generated pressure on 23.5% of his pass rushes on third down this past season, sixth highest among defenders with at least 75 pass rushes on third down. Gary managed to generate pressure on just 7.8% of his pass rushes on early downs, which I want to talk about that as well. Then the 33rd team posted pass rushers with a higher pressure rate than Rashawn Gary since he entered the league, minimum of 1,000 snaps since 2019. Micah Parsons, Nick Bosa, Trey Hendrickson, Myles Garrett, end of list. So Rashawn Gary is fifth since he came into the league in pressure percentage with players over 1,000 snaps as a pass rusher. Your thoughts on Rashawn Gary coming in at number 80 and just in general as a player?
So that's the voted on by players, and I'm not surprised that players love him. His fastball is just so good in terms of his bull rush, right? I think it's a little frustrating at times that he doesn't have a lot of stuff built up off of that bull rush, right? But I think you would be surprised, like, how many young pass rushers, like, guys at the college level, like, if you ask them who their favorite player is, they'd say Rashawn Gary, right? Because he's just so good at that one thing, and they're also decent at that one thing. So they're like, how do I continue to lean into this one thing, right? I'm sure that there's plenty of offensive tackles who are on the smaller side, right? Like if Zach Tom wasn't playing for the Green Bay Packers, or I guess Zach Tom might appreciate this because, you know, they're going against each other in practice and all that stuff, and they play on the same side. But those lighter guys with shorter arms and stuff like that, those are the guys who are like going to really struggle against a Gary and are going to be like, there's literally nothing I can do against a guy like that. Plus, you know, he has, we talked about this a little bit earlier, he has like significantly improved as a run defender. So like, while he doesn't have that changeup as a pass rusher right now, he's definitely become a more well-rounded player. So I understand the players, you know, appreciating him and stuff like that. I mean, he made the Pro Bowl last year, all that stuff. Yeah, I mean, he might be a little frustrating when, you know, the bull rush doesn't hit and you're like, what's your next move? And he doesn't really have one. But hopefully that continues to develop in the same way that we saw his, you know, run defense develop, and maybe having a new pass rush coach helps there, because it's not like the last guy was seeing marginal increases from anyone across the board.
Now, this is a player with 80 some pass pressures just a few years ago before the torn ACL, and he was looking like one of the best pass rushers in the league. He was in the 40s per PFF this past year, the high 40s, like 49. But definitely a difference between being in the 80s and being in the high 40s. I do think it's interesting, though, and what I kind of wanted to go back to here is, again, generated pressure on 23.5% of the pass rushes on third down, sixth highest among defenders with at least 75 pass rushes on third down. That's a really impressive percentage. I'm wondering, because I thought he took a massive step as a run defender this past year, got a lot better at it. And I'm almost wondering if, because he would be somebody in the past that sometimes would overrun it and not necessarily
just lose contain and all that stuff. And we saw that fade away a lot last year. And it's a hard thing, because keeping contain isn't something you really notice, because it's kind of like just like doing your job, right? But when you juxtapose it to even what he was in 2023, like, he was losing the edge a lot. Was losing the edge a lot.
So he was going big game hunting, wanting those sacks, those pressures, those numbers that, you know, would inflate those numbers. But I appreciated the fact that he was a much more well-rounded player this past year. It does feel like there was an emphasis on run defense, especially on early downs. But you go back to the Joe Barry era, they were pretty good on third down, third and long situations. They just could never, ever get there. And it felt like with Jeff Hafley, there was a much bigger emphasis on like, we've got to defend the run better on downs. I still don't think it gets as much credit as it deserves for that turnaround in run defense. But Rashawn Gary was a big part of that. If you can tell me that Rashawn Gary on first and second down is going to be a really good run defender, and then on third down, he's going to be in the top 10 in pressure percentage, like, I'll take that player pretty much every single year. Again, maybe I'd like a little bit more, you know, repertoire to his pass rush moves and things like that, but that's still a damn good player in the NFL. We'll be right back.
Yeah, for sure. And remember the beginning stretch of the season? I can't remember after the first two games, but the first two games, right? Jalen Hurts and Anthony Richardson, and the way that they were just like keeping them in the pocket, bottling them up, not really pinning their ears down. And they were just like, no, you're going to play from the pocket. We're going to try to collapse the pocket by, you know, power rushing and not just like bending around the edge and giving you the opportunity to, you know, if I bend around the edge, maybe it, you know, the B gap goes from this to this, and now Jalen Hurts can go ahead and run through that, right? It was a significant change from strategies that were deployed in previous seasons. So I'm not surprised, you know, like the early down stuff is going down. Again, not super sure how much that matters. I think there's going to be a lot more opportunities this year when, you know, last year, early downs, what, it was T.J. Slade and Kenny Clark with a busted foot and, you know, Preston Smith over the hill, Kingsley Anibar is okay at his job, and then LVN with a busted thumb, right? And now we're going to be in a situation where it's Wyatt, hopefully a healthy Clark, hopefully a healthy LVN, and Rashawn Gary. I'm hopeful that plus, you know, the hopeful coaching boost that you get from Covington coming in as the defensive line coach will yield more pressure. So I don't think Gary's going to have to do it all by himself like he kind of had to last year.
Not to mention speed rusher extraordinaire Colin Oliver, who's going to be taking things by storm on all these passing downs as well. So they've got that working for them also. All right, a couple quick ones before I get you out of here, one or two at least. Ryan Poles, contract extension, thoughts on that?
I mean, he convinced Ben Johnson to come in, right? That was a big win. I don't think a lot of people thought that Ben Johnson was actually going to sign with the Bears. Ultimately ended up doing it for like a pretty substantial contract. Didn't he get like a 6-year deal or something like that?
Yeah.
He got the runway, right? So if you sold Ben Johnson on the vision and he got the runway, I understand why you do that and kind of match him up and pair him up with the general manager who brought him in and was able to seal the deal. Do I think Ryan Poles is a great general manager? No, but I understand it from a, like, I don't think this is Ryan Poles' show anymore. I think this is Ben Johnson's show, right? So just giving him that little bit of security, I think makes sense from a franchise standpoint. I get why you would make that kind of a move, but I'm still not super impressed by what Poles has done as a general manager.
I'm surprised they didn't let it play out through the season because he has 2 years left is my understanding. I didn't look into it that deep, but I believe he has 2 years left. I'm surprised or did have 2 years left. I kind of am surprised they didn't let it play out this season just to kind of see how this year went. Like if he got a bunch of things wrong, like Grady Jarrett just looks completely over the hill. And the dude from the Colts, whose name is now escaping me along the defensive line. If he all of a sudden like just doesn't take a step, Odeyebo or whatever, like if he doesn't take a step and then, you know, they just get some of that stuff wrong. To me, that's a difference. Like, and all of a sudden they're fourth in the division again. I'm surprised they didn't just let it play out for one more year, but I also get like, hey, let's finally get some just groundedness in our group and just kind of some consistency with
goals. I just don't know how many, like, when was the last time the Bears pinned down their quarterback, pinned down their head coach, like pinned down their general manager. Because that stuff, like, if you let it, right? I mean, that thing can be a revolving door where no one's ever on the same page. Everyone's pointing fingers. Like, you never get that cohesion. So I do understand it from that standpoint where you're like, look, we're making our bets. This is what we're doing. It's, you know, Ben Johnson probably has a lot more power than the previous guy did. So
I think that's probably true. All right. Last but not least, you wrote an article on Packers who could potentially make the Pro Bowl in this upcoming season. Who are you kind of keeping an eye on as Pro Bowl candidates for the Packers?
Well, we return five, right? You got Elton, Josh Jacobs, McKinney, Gary, and Clark, right?
Okay.
And I'm hoping Elton plays. I'm hoping Kenny Clark's injury leads to much better football. Or lack of an injury leads to much better football in 2025. The two guys who stood out to me as guys who haven't made it but could break through this next year, right? Tom, who we kind of already talked about.
Yeah.
I think it's easier for him to make Pro Bowl than All Pro just because of how things work out in the NFC specifically. Like, just the fact that he has Penei Sewell in the division and then Lane Johnson in the conference, I think helps or hurts him a lot from an all-pro perspective. So maybe this is the year Zach Tom gets it done. And then the other guy that I said was Tucker Kraft, because I don't even think that they're like they're not even like really feeding Tucker. Like they are using him right. Right, like they're using him as the end line guy. They're moving him around everywhere, all that stuff. But you never really see him in the slot, things like that. Like they don't weaponize him the same way that like the Chiefs weaponize like a Travis Kelce or something like that. They're kind of different body types and stuff like that. Like, you know, Kelce's a lot bigger than he is. But even when he's got this banged up quarterback, he's not the focal point of the offense, all this stuff. He's still getting like 700 yards as like a 24-year-old.
Sure.
And also playing inline and being a real deal tight end in a way that, like, you know, Mark Andrews, Travis Kelce, you know, name whoever you want. like those guys aren't true tight ends. So they're more like these flex players. To me, I think Kraft is probably the second best true tight end in the NFL, like a true one. He's right behind Kittle to me because he can do the inline blocking stuff and he can also do the pass catching stuff. There's not a lot of guys who can do both of those things. Like Travis Kelce isn't putting his hand in the dirt and blocking a defensive end very often, but Kraft is. So I do wonder if even beyond a production bump, you know, he gets credit for doing those other things too. Plus, he's 24. He's probably going to get better.
Yep, he will.
That's crazy. He's the age of draft prospects, and he's true. Doing this type of stuff at a position where it takes, you know, this stuff. I don't know how much you guys follow. I know Andy does, but I don't know how much you guys, the audience, follows the draft. Like, there's a lot of analysis done where it's like, you don't even want to be the team that takes the tight end. You want to be the team that, like, signs the tight end in free agency because that second contract is really when those guys break out because it takes so damn long for those guys to get going because you have to do so many different things as a tight end. And Kraft's kind of already doing that at 24. Like, I'm really excited and happy I get to watch, like, 10 more years of Tucker Kraft. Like,
that's all in. I have four names for you that you did not name. And in fact, one of them has already been a Pro Bowler. You're missing one.
Ooh. Is it Pro Bowl alternate or something like that? I don't know.
Nope.
Maybe going off the wrong list.
True Pro Bowler.
Was he with the Packers when it happened?
It was not.
Okay. So I was looking at a list of when he was with the Packers. Who the hell? It wasn't Banks.
Nope.
Hobbs wasn't.
Nope.
Is it McManus?
Nope.
Is it Mecole?
It is, as a punt returner.
Okay, as a returner. Okay, yeah. Yep. I was like, okay, it's a special teamer.
Yep.
Which special teamer is it?
Mecole Hardman, as a returner, has made a Pro Bowl, so that's one possibility. Brandon McManus, I feel like, is another where if he just has a, like, he has the longevity and whatnot, where if he just crushes it this year, like misses two field goals or something or under, hits all his extra points, he could be in that conversation. And I'm
also, speaking of which, did you know he's a vice president with the NFLPA?
I did not know that.
I didn't know that until the statement came out about some of the collusion stuff and, you know, their solidarity.
I don't want any Packers on the NFLPA. There's too many opportunities for reports of things that happen. I don't need any Packers on the NFLPA.
Well, DeMaurice Smith is writing a book, and apparently the Rodgers NFLPA stuff is in part of that. Because remember, like, Rodgers, like, walked out and just, like...
Yeah, he was not happy.
Just, like, stepped away. Yeah, so I'm interested to, you know, at least get informed from one angle on what that was like. Because Rodgers really hasn't talked about his involvement with the union.
The only other two I would say would be Jordan Love and Edgerrin Cooper. To me, if they play, just have great seasons,
yeah, true.
They could get their name in that conversation, I feel like.
Yeah, I almost threw Love in. I probably should have, just as a potential guy. I just didn't want people arguing in the comment section out there because there's wars being argued about Jordan Love right now. Cooper's a great call, though. I should have brought up Cooper for sure because he probably, if he would have played 17 last year, he's probably defensive rookie of the year, honestly. The way that the votes work for that, it's such a, and unless there's a pass rusher who just like completely breaks through that ceiling and is like a 10 sack guy, defensive rookie of the year usually goes to linebackers just because they have all the recording stats and it's a, you know, low information voting and all that stuff.
I joke all the time, maybe not all the time, but I've joked a few different times where there's all the conversation of the Packers should have taken Cooper DeJean with the first round pick instead of Jordan Morgan. I said, if they could have that first round pick over, they absolutely should have taken Cooper. Edgerrin Cooper is who they should have taken in the first round if they do that pick over. So obviously,
Andy, you have to remember, do not take project defenders. Don't do it unless it works out.
That's a very fair point. Fair point.
It's very funny watching, because especially after last year, like to see people, well, I mean, they got burned, like, people aren't happy about the LBN, like where he's been at so far in his career. So I kind of get that. But people were just like, no projects ever. I'm like, we just saw Edgerrin Cooper was just basically like hanging out on a football field and chasing stuff at Texas A&M. Yep. And he turned into a real deal football player in like a couple months. Like
he had LB next to his name that he was not an NFL linebacker at Texas A&M.
He was a quarterback spy and like a blitzer. Like,
I'm going to miss, what's his name that went to Jacksonville? Why can't I think of his name now? The linebackers coach, Anthony Campanelli. I'm hoping that Campanelli didn't have as much to do with it. I'm hoping it was just Cooper being amazing on his own or the next linebackers coach, Duggan or whatever, is going to be great. But hopefully it was not anything to do with Campanelli in totality. Justice, I know you got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. I cannot thank you enough. AcmePackingCompany.com, social media at JUMOSQ. Anything else you want to plug on the way out?
I just join the comment section, because I think for the next like week, we're just going to be putting up some, like, we call them like community posts, where we just chat about stuff, throw things out there, like the, you know, how many Pro Bowlers are going to make, or how many Packers are going to make the Pro Bowl this year. I think we're going to do stuff like that leading up to training camp, because I think I've churned through about as much of the bucket as I can scrape out. So I'm leaning on you guys now. Join the comment section.
Talk. I will tweet out as much as I possibly can just for you, Justice, just to make sure you got enough stuff to discuss. And I'm going to go on the comment section on Acme Packing Company, make fun of you for not putting Mecole Hardman on that list as well. I will talk to you next week. Bust my balls,
ask questions. If you have questions for me, go in there, ask them, ask why I'm a bozo, all those things.
It's worth your time. I cannot thank you enough, as always. We'll talk next week, right before Packers training camp, which seems amazing to say. Again, follow him at JUMOSQ. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.